serve them. It's not a one-way street. Yes, can we have the next one? Even the deer, the peacocks, yes, they all love Krishna, and Krishna loves them. Even though they are not, they don't serve Krishna in the same way as the cowherd boys do. But yes, that's Krishna, with all the cows and the peacocks and the deer. Okay, he has relationships of love with all of them, and that's what they do. Milking the cows, that's the nice Yamuna River in Vrindavan, and that's what the spiritual world looks like. Even though the rolling hills around Melbourne are so beautiful, but I tell you, it's nothing compared to what's in Goloka Vrindavan. The natural beauty, our founder Prabhupada used to say, the natural beauty of nature that we see around us is merely a reflection of Krishna's beauty. Okay, can we have the next one? So Krishna's having fun and games with his friends, little boyfriends. They go out, raise the cows, and they do a lot of mischief, and they enjoy themselves thoroughly and come back. Each of these pictures is a topic for a lecture in itself. Next one, please. Yeah, here are some of his friends. Krishna himself serving. You know, there's a boy get tired and Krishna will sit there and massage his feet. Oh, you must be tired of running and jumping in the forest. There's a very sweet relationship there that they have with Krishna. Yes, please, next one. They play all sorts of games. They climb his shoulder, he climbs somebody's shoulder. Can you imagine anywhere else? God doing all of that? Yeah, this is the meaning of intimate relationship. You can have an intimate relationship with Krishna in any of these different ways that I've shown you and will show you now for the next few slides. You can do it, and I can do it. It's up to us. It's up to how we cultivate this relationship with Krishna. Yes, next one, please. Here's this famous pastime of lifting the Govardhan hill on the little finger of his left hand. And all the residents of the village gathered under the hill, and he protected them all. There were elders, there were youngsters, there were the cows, everybody gathered there. They all loved Krishna. Krishna was the center of their life. Okay, next one, please. Okay, here he is with his parents and the elders having a nice meal. Yeah, he has a father and mother too. But he selects those devotees who can be his father and mother. Because Krishna is the father of everyone. So who can be Krishna's father and mother? So he chooses some devotees who want to love him in that mood. And they become his father and mother eternally. Next one, please. So that's Krishna's mother and Krishna. He appeared 5,000 years ago. And he actually demonstrated those activities that he did over there in Vrindavan. That he does over there. Yes, continue please. Yes, he also displays pastimes of this sort from childhood. God as a child, as a kid. Yeah, he plays these parts, he likes it. Next one please. And he also has lovers when he grows up. One time somebody came to one of our temples and he saw, you know, the lady right next to him is Radha, Radharani. So this gentleman came to our temple Whatever, well, this is God. He said, oh, even God has a girlfriend. Yeah, so God also has a girlfriend, which is eternally his girlfriend. No breakup. They do have a little quarrel, time to time. And in all these others, they're called the gopis. They assist in that pastime. Okay, I think we'll stop here, the pictures. That was just to give you a glimpse of the relationships that exist in the spiritual world. Whatever relationships exist here, whether it's between friends, between lovers, between parents and children, between the Lord and the servant, or whatever it is, neutral relationships, it all is a perverted reflection of what's there. So if we bring Krishna into our life, then those relationships that we have in this world will become so much more meaningful, so much more full of joy and happiness. And devoid of them, because we get frustrated with our relationships, we get disappointed, therefore we take refuge in pets. And, cats and dogs, because at least they'll be loyal to us. They won't talk back to us. They won't fight with us. You know, we can love them and they'll love us. You know, it's a fact. This is an emotional need. So we have these pets because they will be faithful to us. There'll be no breakups. And finally, we have the neutral relationship. We absorb ourselves in our electronic gadgets. That's the sham, the neutral relationship, because I'm with my machines. So that's all because we don't get any nectar, we don't get any taste in the relationships of this world. When we bring Krishna, then everything becomes spiritualized, everything becomes beautiful. And even if the other person is not conscious of Krishna, but if you are conscious of Krishna, still you love that person. You don't hate anybody. You don't become envious or jealous of anybody. You don't seek harm to anybody. Now these things can only happen when your heart is so full of love that there is no place left for any negative emotion. So to the extent that even if someone harms you, you don't bear any ill will against that person. So naturally, if you have a family, your husband, your wife, a boyfriend, girlfriend, friend, whatever it may be, you know, there'll always be a few things here and there that happened in your life. But you don't bear grudges. It doesn't become a big thing. And then your relationship goes on smoothly lifelong because you've got a higher purpose to live for. Now we're not living only, it's not just about me. It's about us and it's about Krishna. So when our relationships are based on a very solid, enduring, eternal foundation of Krishna consciousness, then those relationships will be very pure, very sublime and joyful. And they will sustain. Even in the Western world, you have the English proverb, a family that prays together stays together. Yeah? That's there, you must have read it in school. Today, unfortunately, this kind of spirit, where we sacrifice our individuality to some degree for the sake of others and for a larger social good, is considered as a sign of a weakness or as a sign of backwardness or something like that. And extreme individualism is celebrated as something glorious. And look at the result of that. If we lose the balance and go to either extreme, either being extremely individualistic on one side or extremely collectivist on the other side, we will have problems. So while cherishing the individual liberties and freedoms and our expression of our individuality, we should also know where to cap it. And in a Krishna conscious way, we will have wonderful relationships with others. This, really speaking, is the crux of everything. Relationships with Krishna and with everything and everyone connected to Krishna, even the environment. A devotee, one who loves Krishna, will love the environment because it's Krishna's environment, it's Krishna's nature. For example, if I love you, I will also be careful with the things that you like and that are your property. Isn't it? So also, if I love Krishna, I will look after his property, this world, this environment. When you artificially try to protect the environment, but you don't give up the exploitative spirit or the highly individualistic spirit, it's not going to last. So really, the process of loving Krishna and loving everything else because you see their connection to Krishna is a solution, the panacea to all our problems in life. And it is not a very simplistic solution as it may seem. It is the only real solution. Generally when we speak of relationships and nurturing them, if you look at Google or some books, there must be so many books available on this. I haven't touched on any of those, you know, suggestions and tips and techniques that they may have offered in those books. Not that in any way they're not useful, I'm sure they're useful. But I wanted to get to the root of the whole issue. The fundamental point lies here. So I would urge all of you who are coming here to Urban Yoga to please connect with Krishna in a spirit of love. And I can assure you, you will not regret it. The only thing you stand to lose is your disappointment, frustration in life, or any other negativity in your life that may exist. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Questions anywhere. Just raise your hand and then I'll try to answer your questions. Yes. Okay, your question is that how does one make a relationship good when you're trying, but another person may not be trying?
Yeah.
Well, then what to do? Relationships can never be forced, can they?
Yeah.
So it has to work both ways. But if you're Krishna conscious and you help your friend to also be Krishna conscious, then therein lies the solution. And even if the other person doesn't agree to become Krishna conscious, but you become Krishna conscious, then you will look at him or her in a different way. It will reflect in the way you talk and act and so on. So automatically the other person will notice there's a change here. There's something attractive there. Right? Any other questions? Yes.
Thank you for the class. Just speaking from the perspective of someone who may have never heard of, when you're talking about Krishna, but we've also heard of other Hindu gods like Shiva or Durga and Ganesh maybe. So how can you understand that this is something different?
Okay, your question is that we talked of Krishna, but what about other Hindu gods like Shiva or Ganesha or something, is this sectarian? Actually, Krishna is not a sectarian idea. He's a person in real. He's really a person. And the question of being a Hindu or a Muslim or a Christian or something is that exists on earth. It doesn't exist in the spiritual world. Krishna is supremely attractive for everybody. Okay. Yes, he's attractive for everybody. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna doesn't say that only certain class of people are the soul and others are not soul, they're the body. The principles of Bhagavad Gita apply to all. They're natural laws for the whole creation, for the whole universe. Right? Like the law of gravity, it applies everywhere. Whichever nationality or faith or whatever you belong to, it acts in everyone because it's the law of nature. So similarly, the principles that we've spoken about are laws of spiritual nature. They apply to everyone and everything. And they're not constrained or restricted by any consideration of a particular religious denomination or something, merely because a certain class of people do believe in him. It doesn't make him a Hindu god, just as gravity doesn't become a British law because Isaac Newton discovered it. Right? Or relativity doesn't become an American thing because Einstein discovered it, or a German or Swiss or whatever. So Krishna is not Hindu, Krishna is not Christian or Muslim, Krishna is not Indian or Aussie or American or anything. Krishna is Krishna. Right? Any other questions? Yes.
I like how you say that to love anyone, you must first develop love for that supreme person. And we know that when people have issues in relationships and they seek for help or counseling, modern psychology will tell you that you must love yourself in order to love others. And there is this intense focus in developing the individual, you know. So what is your stand on, like advancement as a spiritual person and modern psychology?
You mean the idea that we should love ourselves first?
Mm-hmm.
Yes? Is that what modern psychology says? You should learn to love yourself, then you can love others? Okay, so the question is that what do we think of this idea that we should love ourselves? But to love ourselves, we have to know who it is that we are loving. Am I loving the person I see in the mirror? If that's what I love, then that's not going to bring me happiness. That will be a cause of daily anxiety. But if I love myself, the true self, that's the soul, then I will love Krishna. So realizing myself and loving Krishna go hand in hand. When I come in front of a mirror, there has to be some light if I want to see myself in the mirror. Before I see myself, I see the light. It's only then that I can see myself in the mirror. So like that, realizing myself, loving myself and loving Krishna like that. If I begin to love Krishna, automatically I will understand, yes. Because this is the true expression of my love for myself. That I give myself the best that I deserve. The best that can possibly be given to me. And the love of Krishna is the highest gift I can give myself. So love for oneself is not to be seen in some kind of egotistic kind of way. But from a spiritual point of view, understanding that I am the eternal spirit soul. And I'm part and parcel of Krishna, the all-attractive one. Okay? Any other questions? Yes.
You mentioned that developing love for Krishna, so you emphasize that quite often. So how does one get attracted or develop that love without actually being with God, but actually as you can see him in the form of different ways, but as you know, how does one develop that love without, how do you get that personal relationship with him?
Okay, your question is, how does one actually love Krishna? I concluded the talk by saying that we have to keep the company of those who love Krishna or are striving to love Krishna, because that would be a topic in itself. About how to love Krishna, I give the most fundamental thing, that is to associate with those who love Krishna. Because you become what you associate with. If you always associate with people who love football, you will also start liking football. If you associate often with those who love Krishna, you will also develop love for Krishna. So coming in the midst of such lovers or aspiring lovers of Krishna, hearing about Krishna, hearing his message, hearing that philosophy, understanding him, learning about him, learning about us, ourselves, learning about this world through his eyes, and following his basic instructions, that essentially to chant his names. We had the beautiful chanting of the names of Krishna before we had the talk. That's what we should be doing and more. This was a collective process of chanting, and there's also the private chanting that you do on your beads. Like, you know, we have beads here. And then we chant on these beads privately as well, like this. So we do that. Thus we chant collectively, that's the primary thing. And then we study the books, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, which gives us all the information that I showed you on the picture. Then gradually our love for Krishna will increase. Okay, yes.
Could the ideas of the duality in terms of the soul being our identity rather than the body take away from our responsibility and ownership of the way we perceive the reality of life and the phenomena of life?
Okay, so your question is that with us, understanding ourselves to be the spirit soul, take us away from the reality of the world around us.
Yes. Of perceiving this phenomena, like that is life as it is.
Yes, it gives you, so your question is that by us thinking of ourselves as a soul, will it affect the way we perceive the world? Yes, indeed, it will. Without Krishna consciousness, the world is a bewildering place. We can't make sense of it. When you're Krishna conscious, things fall into place like a jigsaw puzzle. And you see things for what they are, not simply what they appear to be. Then you understand what's happiness, what's not happiness. What's love, what's not love. What's temporary, what's not temporary and eternal. What is worth aspiring for, what is not worth aspiring for. What's true, what's false. So things begin to fall in place. So externally you do see the same things that everyone else sees. You see the shopping malls and the cars and the people and everything. You see everything else externally. But you also see through all of that. and see everything in its own place. And you understand what is what.
By surrendering in terms of believing in something like God, you think that it takes away from our ownership and responsibility?
Oh, okay. Your question is, if we believe in Krishna, will that make us irresponsible? What about our relationships and our responsibilities in this world? In terms of ourselves and our relationships and everything else, actually it will make you more responsible. It will make everything more meaningful because now you see everything in connection with Krishna. Even your own body, your friends, your family, your work, your everything. Now you will see it in connection to Krishna. So you will Krishnaize everything. And that makes it sublime. Okay? Yes.
First of all, thanks for the Prabhupada.
Thank you.
It's a very important topic. His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, wrote this book, Krishna and Christ, or Christ and Krishna, to address some issues or points about Christianity, where he supposes that the Christian tradition or religion hid or hide some facts or some words of Jesus Christ. One is regarding reincarnation and afterlife. The second one is meat eating, where the Christians make this difference between an animal and a human life. So he goes on, I want to focus my question on the second point, he goes on talking about how in fact it is not very advanced and civilized to eat any living entities because they are in fact soul. And also he says that it is in fact the most sinful thing to harm or kill a cow for any sort of pleasure. And I also know from the pictures that Krishna was a coward boy and that Krishna-conscious people still consume milk in their diet. I wonder, because Krishna, Srila Prabhupada has said in this book that supporting killing of animals is, or killing of cows is still very sinful, so what about the milk industry nowadays, and how does this relate to still consuming milk?
Okay, your question is about the milk industry today. The modern milk industry is based on exploitation of the cow and the bull. It's an industry. It's not a beautiful activity like we saw Krishna doing, where the cows are protected till the end, till they had a natural death. Of course, in the spiritual world, nobody dies. But so in the dairy industry, what happens is that the moment a bull calf is born, or maybe after some time, he's sold to the beef industry. And after the cow ceases to give an optimum level of milk, she's also sold to the beef industry. So, number one, that's the huge cruelty that goes on. Number two, you also inject all sorts of chemicals and whatever, I don't know, oxytocin maybe, or some hormones into the milk to artificially increase the production of milk, which is also a form of cruelty to the cow. They also subject the cow to so many other forms of distress by machining and so on to increase the output. Furthermore, very importantly, they deprive the calf of its rightful share of milk. And therefore, the modern dairy industry is indeed like that, yes. It is very cruel. And many people now are speaking up a lot against the modern day dairy industry. But as far as milk is concerned, the milk itself is not an objectionable item, provided we take care of all these other things. If you look after the cow and the bull with love, look after them really with love, like your own family members, which is what we do in our cowsheds and our temple projects and so on. We look after them like our own family, we love them, we care for them, till they die a natural death. We try to see that the calves get as much milk as they want and as they need from the mother. We don't separate the mother and the calf. We keep them together. It's also another form of cruelty to separate the mother and the calf. We keep them together. We don't inject them with all sorts of hormones and everything. The cow usually produces much more milk than its calf can consume. And then gradually the calf weans away from the milk and moves on to grass and fodder and other things which are necessary for the growth of that calf. So therefore milk is legitimate food if it is not extracted in a cruel way, as I mentioned earlier. Right? So milk is not meat, it is not a product of killing. We are strongly against any cruelty or any killing. But where the product is a natural product of the love, the calf actually gives out of love. You see, just like a mother gives milk out of love for the child, even a human mother. So the cow, when she is loved and when she is happy, she gives lots of milk. And there's more than enough for the calf and more for human beings as well. There are so many descriptions, I've seen it personally, when a cow, and this was really amazing, I remember seeing this, she was releasing a milk even without a calf because her udders were so full. And she had a stream of milk just flowing out. She needs to be milked, you know, otherwise it's a problem for them. So milk is a very sattvic item, it's a very pure item, if it's cruelty-free.
I mean, I see this raising cows and others, the love giving the cows at the Krishna farms, for instance. But I also know that the temples cannot rely entirely on these cows raised in the farm, for instance. And I know for these festivals that there is lots of milk required that just comes from the supermarket. So yeah, I'm not always sure if this is entirely working together.
Yes, you see, as far as possible, our society has come so far away from Krishna's standard. So far away. And here we are with a few temples struggling like anything to maintain a few cows. And even that is so hard because you have the people who live there and then there's, you know, various challenges that you face. And the modern dairy industry has made it's so difficult for farmers to, in fact our devotees, some of them, they're working towards what we're calling an Ahimsa milk project. Cruelty free, and trying to do it on a commercial basis so that people will get cruelty free milk available. But it's a real challenge, because the milk that is produced like this will be four times as expensive as milk available in the supermarket. And why are the supermarkets able to sell it so cheap? Because they get a lot of money by selling the cows and the bulls. And they get a lot of money by injecting them with things to extract more milk from them and so on. So they're able to bring down the price so significantly. But if you don't sell the cows and bulls, and if you treat the cows and bulls with love, then the cost is so much more. That's the way the standard is. So for temples to compete with huge industries is very difficult. But I think slowly as people become more aware of it, it's going to catch on. So I think there is a phase of struggle going on where even Krishna's temples are struggling to keep up with it all. But ultimately, yes, you offer the milk to Krishna, Krishna accepts it. We try to do the best we can. But yes, what you're saying is an ideal situation and we should move towards that. And I think lots of devotees are making efforts to do that. Okay, I think we are out of time now, isn't it? Or do we have time? One last question. Anyone else? Okay, one final question.
Thanks.
You have the last set.
Thanks also for the talk. And did I understand it right? So if I love Krishna, I also love the other people. I don't feel any hate for the other people. Did I understand it right? So how to deal with like violent people or people who are cruel? Yeah, how? And I see something, maybe a scene. For example, the last time we have seen a scene in our hostel where there were a couple and they fight each other. So yeah, how should I deal with something like this?
Yeah, I mean, loving Krishna doesn't mean that we tolerate injustice or exploitation, right? Loving Krishna doesn't mean you become passive and inactive and weak. You know, where there is such exploitation and cruelty, we will do what we can to stop it. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
But not with a spirit of hate.
Mm-hmm.
Not with malice.
What is malice?
Malice, what is it? Malice means hatred, negative emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Not with hatred. Just as a judge in a court will sentence somebody, he doesn't hate that person, he's doing what's right, what has to be done. He sentences someone to punishment. The judge is not supposed to hate. The judge is supposed to neutrally just see what's happening and judge accordingly. So yes, we feel for the suffering of others. When you love Krishna, then you actually feel compassionate for everything and everyone, including animals. So generally we talk of cruelty only to human beings, but what about cruelty to the animals? Right? So yes, we try to do what we can to stop this exploitation and cruelty. So that's what the whole Bhagavad Gita is about, because Arjuna was about to fight a battle, and if you remember, that's the theme on which I started the whole talk. That Arjuna was hesitant, but Krishna says, no, you do it for me, because I don't want to see this exploitation going on. I want to see justice. So for the sake of justice, he had a war. There's so much violence.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's the first option, it's always the last option. The last resort when nothing else is available. Let's say you're walking on the street and somebody comes to assault you or your friend. You wouldn't say, I love Krishna, therefore I let the person assault me. No. You would do what you need to do to defend yourself. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the practical thing. So love of God doesn't mean that you become completely impractical in this world.
Mm-hmm.
So we do what is necessary for us to protect ourselves and others from cruelty and exploitation. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So thank you very much. I'd like to thank all the organizers of this Urban Yoga program. All those participating in the organizing, can you please raise your hand? Okay, thank you very much for organizing it and for participating, those of you who helped out in different ways. My thanks to all of you. And definitely my heartfelt thanks to all of you. You've been a wonderful audience. None of you were texting in the class. None of you fell asleep in the class. And I thank you for encouraging me with your attention. Thank you very much, and my best wishes to all of you.
Thank you.